If I had all the money in the world, let's say I had $10 million, what kind of doctor would I want to be? Then I realized I'm doing what I want to do. And I saw patients that were sick as dogs go in, sometimes on respirators, especially on carbon monoxide exposures, and they would walk out of the chamber after being like on a respirator when they went in. Okay, I prescribe drugs, I prescribe supplements, I prescribe meditation, I prescribe doing absolutely nothing, turning off your goddamn phone during your meditations, gratitude, mindfulness, whatever. Come back to why. What's your why? You know, we just want to, you know, move the needle on health just a little bit. 90% of people don't want to change what they do. 90% of people don't want to exercise if they're not already exercising, right? They don't, or they'll pick up a habit for a little while, but then they'll break it, right? They'll stop doing it.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and do something with your life. Today, we're going to talk about healing, more specifically, healing with every breath. Today's guest is Dr. Scott Scher, one of the very few doctors in the US working with hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is the administration of 100% oxygen at greater than atmospheric pressure. He believes that this is one of the most powerful ways to decrease inflammation, accelerate wound healing, and optimize both physical and mental performance. I'm so excited for this week's episode. So without further ado, let's welcome the amazing Dr. Scott Scher. Welcome.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate the introduction.
Yeah,
it's nice to be here.
That's just a short one, and we're going to use this hour to share your journey.
Sure.
So let's start with... You said when you were 18, you had this idea of wanting to change the world. Like, where did that come from? Were you this little nerdy kid, like studying everything? Or like, what did this like drive to do something come from, you know?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do partly with my father, partly with just seeing how he interacted with lots of different practitioners and how he interacted with patients. He had a wellness center, he still does, in New York, where he had 20 or 30 practitioners all in the same building working together. And that was really novel for the time. Now we see that we're in a WeWork building, for example. You see people working either separately or together. There's these new office spaces in New York City, co-working spaces for professionals, but he was doing this back in the 80s. So I saw that, and then I got some traveling done when I was a kid, and just getting a perspective of the world and seeing different cultures, and also being away from my family, being more independent, and just knowing that I could potentially have a significant impact, that we all could. And I had to just find what my way was going to be. So I think a lot of kids when they're 18, 20, 22, they really were invincible, right? We're at our prime age to fight wars, to procreate, although most of us don't do it at 18 anymore, thankfully, and to be resilient and to try new things and to fail. And that was really what I thought medical school would potentially be, something that I could really do my best, maybe fail, but let's see how it goes and see how I do and see really where I could find my niche inside of that. So.
And we're going to talk much more about performance, because what you're doing can also improve in performance.
Right.
So how did you perform in medical school, and how did you use that mindset? Because there's so many people out there like who have anxiety to perform, and like many people want to become a doctor, but they're afraid of going after it. So can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good question. I think I had like a lot of medical students do, I had a pretty good work ethic. Yeah. So I wasn't worried about the work per se. Initially, I thought, well, I've done really well in college. I did well in high school. It'll just be like that. I'll be like going to college. I was so wrong. It was so much more work. But what you realize is that you are in this tight-knit group of people, and you make these amazing friendships and just have these amazing moments of camaraderie and of joy and of suffering, of pain, and it's all part of this beautiful process. I look back at medical school now, I don't remember any of the work. I remember my trips to Paris and my trips to South America when we had time off and the parties that we went to. But that's because I worked so hard, and then I had time, then I knew I would have time to enjoy myself. So I was also young, honestly. So I was 23 when I went to medical school. So I worked hard and I party hard, honestly. Yeah. And when I was trying to get my work done, I was very regimented about what I did. And so people thought I was crazy. I would skip the pizza parties, or I wouldn't drink alcohol during the day when we had a test coming up or something. I would always make sure that, and that's something that I've always been pretty good about, is my time management. So making sure that I was very, and you know all about time management, obviously, Peter. So, but if you're really strict on your time, and I worked out every day, I got exercise every day, I lifted weights 4 or 5 times a week. And I mean, just, you know, using your muscles, using your lymphatics, getting your body moving, it was really important to me. And so really important to my, I think to my success in medical school.
Yeah, no, I love that. And like what we, a lot of times what we forget, and what I'm trying to do here is to share, like, who's the person behind the success? Because it's, when it comes down to it, it's all about habits, right? And having a right plan and time management. So I really love that. And what you said about working out, about skipping the beers when you actually had something important and know when to party and when to relax. And some people don't have that balance. And that's why we see in the world that people like you, you excel. And some people haven't been taught. For some people, it's natural. You know when to do it. For other people, they have to learn it.
Right.
And that's why we're doing podcasts just like this.
Right.
So let's move on to you becoming an MD.
Sure.
So where did you do your residency? And like, for how long did you work before you decided to like move on to your own thing?
Sure. So I went to UCLA for undergraduate. And I, from there, went to Baltimore at the University of Maryland. And so there's 2 schools in Baltimore. I always get asked if I went to Hopkins, but I went to University of Maryland. No offense against Hopkins, but if you really wanted to be a doctor that saw patients, you went to University of Maryland. If you went to Hopkins, you were a fantastic researcher. You saw crazy stuff. But if you really wanted to be a clinician, in my opinion, you went to Maryland. And so it was a fantastic training. And but it was during my medical training that it really came to light where my life would go. I didn't know it initially, and it happened in a crazy place. It happened in a trauma center, because University of Maryland is associated with a trauma center called Shock Trauma. Yeah. Baltimore is very known for, I don't know if you heard of the show The Wire before, but The Wire was a show on HBO about 15 years ago, maybe longer now. And it was all about Baltimore and its sort of downtrodden gang culture, drugs, guns. So it kind of got a bad rap, honestly. Baltimore is a fantastic city, and it's grown a ton since I was starting there in 2003 until I left in 2012. But it was also a place where there was tons of gunshot wounds, tons of trauma. So there was a shock trauma center. In the basement of the shock trauma center was a gigantic submarine-looking structure that I later found out was called a multi-place hyperbaric chamber. And what they were doing was putting patients in there that had severe flesh-eating bacteria, so necrotizing fasciitis. They were putting patients in there that had carbon monoxide poisoning. And I saw patients that were sick as dogs go in, sometimes on respirators, especially on carbon monoxide exposures, and they would walk out of the chamber after being like on a respirator when they went in. And I asked the technicians, I'm like, what did you guys just do? And they just told me it's very simple. It's just a combination of increased atmospheric pressure and increased inspired oxygen. That's it. And I said to myself, that's it? Just those two things could take somebody off a respirator, or in the case of somebody with flesh-eating bacteria, like salvage their limbs. So instead of getting amputations, they were able to salvage or to save their legs or their toes or their fingers, which this flesh-eating bacteria can actually kill off and make you have to amputate. So it was the simple idea of just combining these two stimuli, the pressure and the oxygen, that got my mind going, wow, this could be something. And then I did a bunch of research later on. I mean, at the time I was in the shock trauma center doing my medical, my third year, and I was on call every 3 nights for 30-hour shifts. So it was intense. I mean, I saw crazy, crazy shit. People like with their hearts pumping out blood and the shock. I mean, it was crazy, but it was a fantastic experience. Yeah. But so I was too tired to really comprehend what I was seeing. But afterwards, when I had a little bit of time, I was like, well, this is just oxygen pressure. What can we use this for? And I looked and I saw there was already 14 indications that were covered by commercial insurance in this country and Medicare. And in the world as it is, there was like 50 to 70 indications that had a lot of research behind them. And I got really excited and I started learning more about it in medical school. And then I started developing more of kind of a headset of what I would like to do with this. Although that was almost sort of unconscious, because I was still finishing medical school, I was finishing my residency, and then I moved to California in 2012 with my wife, and at that point, there just happened to be an opening to be a medical director of a facility in San Francisco. And I had a fantastic nurse that was working there who knew tons about hyperbaric medicine. Her name is Gail, and she was fantastic. She was a patient herself and knew everything about hyperbaric medicine, and I was like, this is fantastic. And that's really how I got started in on the road of not just being a conventional doctor, but now transitioning to be in a field where hyperbaric medicine was bridging that gap. It had 14 indications that were covered by insurance and that were medically necessary, FDA approved, whatever, but it also had 50, 100 things that had great research that were not covered by insurance and that could potentially be healed or vastly mitigated in the chamber and that could be used in a very integrative way. And so then I really developed this sort of what I call an integrative hyperbaric practice around that philosophy.
Interesting. So let's break it down for a person who doesn't understand it, who is not in medicine. So who will go to you and what will you do? Do you have an example?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of examples. I think maybe just to define what hyperbaric medicine is real quick, just so, because I think this will help frame the people that come find me. Yeah. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy, like we said, is just two things. It's increased atmospheric pressure and increased inspired oxygen. Yeah. So increased atmospheric pressure, we're simulating the pressure that you would feel if you were underwater. So if you're 25, 33 feet below the water level, all the water above you is exerting a pressure on you. You don't feel it because you're weightless in the water, but if you carry a bucket of water, it's a heavy bucket of water. So that pressure is heavy, and it's that heaviness that changes how your body's physiology works. You add to that increased inspired oxygen. So at sea level, 21% oxygen in the air that we breathe. We can increase that obviously to 100%. And it's the combination of that increased atmospheric pressure plus the oxygen that drives more oxygen into circulation. Now, oxygen is usually carried by the red blood cells. So we have red blood cells in our bloodstream that carry oxygen from our lungs as we breathe it in and goes to all our organs, all our tissues. Without oxygen, we don't do very well after a couple minutes, as we all know. Oxygen is the electron receptor for making energy at the cellular level, at the mitochondrial level. So the mitochondria are the batteries of our cells. They make energy. So what hyperbaric therapy is doing is increasing the amount of oxygen in circulation, not by increasing the amount of red blood cell saturation, because most of us are doing very well on our own. If you've ever had a pulse oximeter on your finger that reads like 97% or something like that, that's 97% of those sites are saturated as your red blood cells go through your lungs and pick up oxygen. So there's not much more a hyperbaric chamber could do, or even breathing extra oxygen can do. However, if you add pressure to that, you pressurize the oxygen, and the oxygen actually gets diffused directly into the liquid of your blood or the plasma of your blood. And the plasma has very little oxygen in it at sea level or even at baseline. And that's the harnessing power that we're talking about. So we can increase the amount of oxygen in the plasma by about 12 times or 1200%. And that's the key of what's happening in the chamber. We're infusing a significant amount more oxygen directly into the liquid of the blood, not attached to the red blood cell. And as a result of that, it diffuses out of the red blood cell, kind of like diffusion of water or any other material from high concentration to low concentration, outside of a blood vessel to a much more significant degree. So patients that come see me come for various reasons, but what hyperbaric therapy is doing, falls into four categories. It reverses hypoxia, okay, number one. So you're reversing hypoxia by infusing all this oxygen immediately. And also what you're doing over the long term in the chamber is that you're actually increasing the number of blood vessels that can go to area. So as a result of that, more oxygen can get to the tissue over the long term. It's also decreasing inflammation. As you decrease inflammation in the short term, you help decrease swelling and you help the tissue function better. Over the long term, you actually change how the DNA expresses and suppresses various genes that are responsible for growth, inflammation, and programmed cell death. The third thing it does is it causes a massive release of stem cells from the bone marrow and from neurologic tissue. The stem cells are these new cells that come and that actually can form new tissue, new cells, new neurons, new muscle cells, new heart cells, you name it. And the fourth thing it does is kill bugs, kill bacteria, fungus, virus that don't like high oxygen environments. So I know that's a lot of background, but I think it's important just to give a framework.
Yeah.
So to give a patient example,
yeah.
Somebody comes to see me with a migraine headache.
Yeah.
It's very common.
And they have been to other doctors
yes.
first. Right? You're kind of the last resort.
Unfortunately, hyperbaric medicine tends to be the last resort for a lot yeah. of people. They've gone through a lot of doctors. They haven't had any success. And they're like, Dr. Scott, I have these migraines. They won't go yeah. away. Will hyperbaric therapy work for me? And I say to them, maybe. And they go, what do you mean maybe? I'm like, well, if you have an acute migraine, hyperbaric therapy will very likely make it go away.
Yeah.
But will this technology, will this therapy help you in the long term? The answer is maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
The key is to look at your foundational health first. And as I've evolved my practice, and as I've met new mentors along the way, I've found that the key for all of us is to not focus on disease, not focus on conditions all the time. At least at the same time, in parallel, or even before, if possible, we should focus on our cellular foundation, the basic cells that make up our whole body, our endoplasmic reticulum, our cytosol, our mitochondria, and looking at cellular metabolism, looking at our gut health. And if you can balance those aspects of our biology, then everything else gets better and easier, and you get more resilient, and it's easier to treat everything for the most part. So that has developed into a practice called health optimization medicine, which is something that was founded by a mentor of mine.
That's basically prehab, almost like you're doing things to be healthy.
Right.
So like exercising, like eating healthy, like sleeping, this would be an add-on to that to be a healthy person.
Right, it's all part of that,
yeah.
right? And so the idea is somebody comes to see me with a migraine headache, I want to do a foundational assessment first. Because if I see that their cellular metabolism, their ability to make energy is really crappy because they don't have B vitamin stores, their antioxidant levels are in the tank, they have toxicity, then what I'm doing by putting them in the chamber is actually stressing them more without being able to really harness the power of their cellular metabolism, their cellular energy production capability. So I've had a lot of patients do well in the chamber, but if they don't look at this as a foundational approach, they don't look at this as a lifestyle change in some ways, that they often will go back to the way they were eventually. So I have colleagues that are very much into the anti-aging space in hyperbaric medicine. Hyperbaric medicine, that was new. hyperbaric medicine. And so these guys are showing fantastic results in Israel, actually. And they're showing that they can take somebody that's with mild cognitive impairment or even doing well and create new blood vessels in their brain, new blood vessels around their heart, and make their hearts pump better and have more oxygen get to your heart, because actually you can create new blood vessels in your heart and actually new blood vessels in your genitals and make you have better erections, right? So you can do all that. But over the long term, if you're still eating McDonald's every day, if you're not sleeping well, if you're not getting outside, going to the beach or getting sunlight, all of that's going to go away again. So it's a great business model in some ways, right? Hey, you do well, come back in 6 months when you're still not changing anything you do. But that's not the way I feel the most passion about what I do. My passion is, let's give this holistic approach. And not everybody's going to take it. Not everybody's going to do everything, and that's fine. But at least give an understanding of, if you really want foundational health and long-term improvements with something like hyperbaric therapy to really accelerate and synergize and take you to that next level, make those migraines go away forever or vastly mitigate them, you really need to think about how you're going to do that holistically. And that may just be this foundational approach, health optimization medicine with hyperbarics, and maybe going to see a cranial sacral therapist, and maybe going to see acupuncturist, doing neurofeedback. Have you had previous traumatic brain injuries, for example? I see that a lot. I see a lot of patients that had undiagnosed traumatic brain injuries as a kid or as a young adult, and they just didn't know that's why they have headaches.
Yeah, I love that. So, Dr. Scher, I only have two more questions because we're running out of time. And okay. We have a couple of more meetings today.
Yeah, so perfect.
One thing that I want to touch base with you because I'm a little bit curious. Yeah. You're this research-based guy, like you're a doctor, but you went out of the box. Like, what are your thoughts about things that we can't explain? Like people that are healed by thinking positive, or like the universe, thinking about, like, what are your thoughts about those things? Do you believe in that, or what do you feel about those things?
So if a doctor comes in here and tells you that all of that's bullshit, yeah, run, you know, or a doctor in your office or the office that you go to, all you have to do is point to the placebo effect. The placebo effect heals people. Take an antidepressant or take a placebo, the placebo works almost as well as the antidepressant. And so why is that the case? We have this fantastic inner ability to actually change our own biology by just changing how we relate to the world around us. And it's as simple as changing your perception. All around us right now, we're perceiving everything, but we think, right? We're perceiving the world around us, but we're only perceiving maybe 5% of what's going on, right? You and I are talking, there's a room here, there's lights, but we filter all that stuff out. This perception that we have inside of us is this dream reality that that's actually getting mirrored in our brain, that we're actually looking at and seeing and perceiving. But the beautiful thing is that we get to change all that. We can change all of that as long as we know that there's power to do it. And so what healers can do, and energy medicine and sort of this other, you know, the woo-woo stuff, is that they're able to do some of the, I talked about unblocking. They're basically allowing you to utilize the power of the placebo, but actually change your framework and perception. And then even that, without anything else, changes how your cells work, how your biology works. And so absolutely, I believe that if something works and it's not harming you or anybody else, fantastic, right? So that's where I probably am different from a lot of other doctors, right? I mean, so like I said, a lot of doctors will say, that's bullshit, you shouldn't do that, there's no evidence. I'm like, look, they did it. They got better. Yeah. So what if there's no evidence, yeah, right? And so did it harm him? Did it harm them or anybody else? And did it cost them money? Yeah, so it cost them money. So that's something to be considered, of course. That's why you want to try to do things, at least when I recommend things, I try to recommend things that have some data to support it. But I also don't disregard people that can heal without any evidence, right? Can make people walk that couldn't walk again, or speak that couldn't speak. I mean, I've seen these things, right? I've seen, it's crazy, but it's amazing. And it doesn't surprise me one bit, you know, because as soon as we get out of our own stories, our own ways that we think we perceive the world, and realize that there is so much more that we don't understand that is available to us if we just sort of depress our default mode network, which is our stories, our relationships to the world, and just let it all, and meditation helps a lot with this as well, you realize that so much more is possible than you can ever imagine.
You just have to be open to it and see it. So the last question is something that I ask all my guests, and we're all about sharing journeys and tools, and we've done that today. But one thing that I really want my listeners to do right after listening to this is to take at least one step to get closer to their dream, their goal. So if you could give your best tips to get started right now, what would that be?
That's a great question. And I think I have three answers, if that's okay.
That's okay.
but it's the way I think about it is, and I've answered this, I have a really good friend. He's up in the Bay. His name is Austin, and he's a fantastic movement guy. One of the most intuitive guys that I know. And he and his friend Jeff do a podcast, and Jeff asks great questions. And he asked me this question, and he asked me, he's like, Scott, if you have no resources, if you have zero money, you have zero or very little money, you don't have a huge house, you don't have like the fancy stuff, you don't have the ability to do everything that you can or all these technologies, if you had very little money, very little resources, what are the three things that you could do to really be healthier? And it's a fantastic question. And I've thought about it a lot. And so the first one is connect with others. And so we're having this podcast together. Peter, we are interacting. Our phones are off. We are a community. We're making a community. You're making a community. Like being communities, we know that the number one risk factor for dying early and being being lonely is not having good relationships. And so we know that happiness is directly related to the relationships that you have in your life. Now, honestly, the first relationship is with ourself, of course. So connect to yourself, but also connect to others, your community, whatever that might look like for you, and turn off your phone. Turn off the phone. Don't even just put it on the table next to you, like at dinner. Like, just get it off the table, you know, so it's not even in your consciousness. Like, when people have their phones at dinner with me, I say, let's just take them off the table, you know? Put them away. Let's just have a conversation. Yeah. So that's number one, connecting. The second is movement and breath. Just getting a walk around the block, getting your feet in the sand, just taking some deep breaths as you move. Just a little bit of movement, it changes your state. It changes your physiology. It's something that Tony Robbins talks about, but it's really powerful. As soon as you start moving, jump up and down, I've gotten people, for example, that were contemplating suicide to calm themselves down by jumping up and down 10 times with their hands above their head. Just moving their body, changing their state, changing their breath. Didn't take any money, didn't take any resources, you moved. The third one doesn't take any money to fast, to not eat. So I think having periods of time in our day or taking days at the time sometimes, if you're healthy enough, to go without food is also really good from an evolutionary medicine perspective. Our bodies are used to fasting, so getting some fasting in your diet, intermittent fasting, taking 8 hours of eating, 16 hours of fasting, if you can, or even 10 hours of eating and 14 hours of fasting, that's a really good way to start changing your physiology and giving yourself mild, what's called ketosis or fasting state that helps your body regenerate, recharge, get rid of some garbage. It's a really, really nice way to start getting your body into better shape. So didn't take any money, didn't take any resources, but you connect with others, you move, you breathe, and you fast. So that's what I recommend everybody do. Now, one of the questions I always get is like, what's the one thing you can do in your diet, for example, to be healthier? And that's like a loaded question too. But for me, what I often tell people is if you can take out all the processed food in your diet and take out added sugar, you're also gonna be, I mean, especially if you're eating those things, of course, your health is going to get better in weeks, if not days, really, taking out added sugar and processed foods. So I try to give people little things like that. I hope that's helpful. The one thing, it's such a hard, you know, but that's what I would say. Yeah.
No, it's great. And I had an amazing time today here with you, Scott. And I learned a lot. I'm more curious about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And if this people want to learn more, like, where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Has been a lot of fun. And I really respect your time and your efforts and your goal of reaching 10 million people,
yeah,
you said, in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic goal. And I hope we get maybe 1,000 people to listen, or maybe even 10. I don't care. It doesn't matter. What I hope is that something in this episode resonated with you, with the listener, and that you can take this, if not in your life, and then affect somebody else's life in a positive way. And so where you can find me, the place where I'm probably most active right now is on Facebook. I have Integrative HBOT, the word integrative and the letters HBOT for hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I also have a website, integrativehbot.com. And I do consultations and education advocacy across the country, across the world. So I work with clients all over the world, and I help them coordinate with their local providers. I have colleagues that do hyperbaric medicine across the United States, across the world, that I help coordinate with. Also practitioners and providers that do all different types of crazy things and conventional things. I'm based in the Bay Area, so I do see clients there in a clinic in San Francisco called Hyperbaric Medical Services. And I also do a consultation at a practice called Bay Area Hyperbarics, which is in the South Bay. I have colleagues in LA. I'm working on a very cool project actually in LA that will hopefully be open in about 6 months. That's also going to be working on recovery optimization, and I can talk more about it when it's going to get closer. But there's, I think the best place to get a hold of me would be those two places. And then if you want to learn more about the foundational approach, the educational program that we're working on for healthcare practitioners, doctors, it's at healthoptimizationmedicine.org. And I've done lots of podcasts, lots of media around all of these, because I feel like one of my other roles is I love conversations about this work. Love providing the material to an audience that maybe has heard a little bit about this and now can take some of this and really rocket forward, or if they want, they can contact me and we can do more on a personal level. I do speaking, I do lecturing. It's my hope that I can be a vessel to get this information out there, just like you.
Yeah. And I love that. And I mean, to share ideas is the best thing we can do, share conversations. And a lot of our listeners didn't know anything about this before today, which is great. So I want to thank you once again. And I want to thank you that listen to this podcast. And if you really enjoy what we are doing, you should check us out on ilovesuccess.co and subscribe to our newsletter. We're giving you all kinds of crazy cool tools so you can succeed better in your life. And I want to help 10 million people in 10 years, but right now the most important person is you, because I can't do it myself, but we can do it together. So if you like what I'm doing, if you're on board on the mission, share this podcast with someone else so we can keep growing, keep helping more people to accomplish their dreams, because we all know how great it feels when we have a goal, we work towards it, and we accomplish it. Thanks again, and talk with you next week. Bye-bye.